At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
President of the United States, the Oval Office address, using a significant metaphor for the United States authority, the arsenal of democracy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's metaphor from the beginning of the Second War. The arsenal of democracy is said to be inadequate for the scale of the two-front war, possibly a third front always threatening in East Asia. I welcome Brad Bowman of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, an experienced man when it comes to logistics. He served in the U.S. military, U.S. Army. He's taught the U.S. Army, and so I call upon him because I've learned from Brad and his colleagues that tactics are what people talk about. Logistics is what wins wars. What is the industrial base? What are the needs of our allies in Israel and Ukraine? Brad, a very good evening to you. Randomly from the Middle East, the breaking news story, IDF believes it's ready for Gaza ground game. Or U.S. officials said advising Israel to delay Gaza ground op. Or IDF intercepts drones over north, foils Hezbollah missile squads. Or U.S. warns Iran against escalation, boosts military readiness. What does Israel need? What is the capability of the U.S. Army or U.S. Navy, U.S. Air Force to deliver? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. You know, on October 7th, we did a press call right after news broke about this barbaric attack by Hamas on Israeli men, women, and children, from infants to elderly people. The single worst attack, single day attack on Jews since the Holocaust. And I said at that time that the most immediate needs of Israel were going to be additional interceptors, Tamir interceptors for its Iron Dome air defense system to deal with the rockets from Hamas and potentially the many more rockets that would come from Hezbollah if Hezbollah chose to enter the fight against Israel in Israel's north. And I also said that Israel was going to need precision-guided munitions, PGMs, so that they could precisely attack terrorist targets in Gaza while minimizing civilian casualties. And I also said that if we saw a large ground incursion, that Israel's needs would evolve over time. I'm happy to report that in the first days after October 7th, what I suggested there on October 7th is exactly what the Biden administration has moved to provide. According to public reports, they've provided hundreds of joint direct attack munition kits to Israel. That allows them to turn DUN bombs into precision-guided munitions. We've also provided small diameter bombs, and we've also provided some Tamir interceptors to replenish Israel's Iron Dome systems. But as Israel contemplates a major incursion into Gaza, right, that brings to fore the 155 millimeter howitzer shells. Your listeners may remember that in January, we provided tens of thousands of artillery shells. The U.S. took them out of the U.S. stockpile in Israel and sent those to Ukraine. At the time, I said, okay, that's fine, because I support helping Ukraine defeat Putin's unprovoked invasion, but you better replenish them quickly. Well, that warning, if I do say so myself, is pretty prescient because of what we're seeing now. So that it really is the one area of real overlap right now. There is little to no overlap between arming Ukraine and arming Israel on precision-guided munitions. There is zero overlap when it comes to Iron Dome, because there is no Iron Dome in Ukraine. There is a little overlap on the 155 millimeter artillery shells, but I believe that overlap can absolutely be managed. And the primary reason for that is because since February of last year, we've significantly increased our domestic U.S. production of 155 millimeter shells. Over the past month, we've roughly doubled it to 28,000 per month. It's on a pace to be 57,000 per month by the spring of 2024. And by the way, there might be a few countries that also produce 155 artillery shells that haven't arm Ukraine that might be willing to directly or indirectly provide them to Israel.
Ukraine, I read that 31 M1A1 Abrams, the main battle tanks, have reached theater. And you mentioned the ATACMS. However, there are more needs for Ukraine in the third winter of war. What do they need? Can we provide it? We've been buying shells or in some fashion securing shells from Pakistan, from Israel, from other parts of the NATO. Is it enough, Brad?
You know, I'm so glad that the Army tactical missile systems, the ATACMs, have finally arrived in Ukraine. I called for those, I think, 14 or 15 months ago. That's already yielding results on the battlefield. That's excellent. I'm glad that the M1 Abrams are showing up. Let's be honest, 31 is a drop in the bucket and not nearly the number that they really need. They now have what we call a petting zoo in terms of armor, the Ukrainians do. Lots of different types of tanks in small quantities, which is a logistical and sustainment nightmare, by the way, something I warned about in the past. But I would just quickly flag that the Biden administration sent to Congress, as many of your listeners will know, a supplemental appropriations request of about $105 billion. The majority of that is more than $61 billion for Ukraine. And so that additional funding will help. And, you know, there's some people in Congress who think they're being real cute by not supporting Ukrainian funding because they don't support helping this beleaguered democracy defeat Putin's unprovoked invasion. But by delaying Ukrainian funding, they're actually hurting U.S. military readiness, because a lot of the weapons we provided Ukraine have come from U.S. inventories on the presumption that they would be replenished. And by not providing the funding, you literally have U.S. military units sitting here with weapons that have already been sent to Ukraine and no replenishments in sight, hurting U.S. military readiness.
Back to the Middle East. The U.S. Navy has one, and soon enough, I believe, two carrier strike forces in the eastern Mediterranean. The USS Carney is credited with shooting down a Houthi missile out of Yemen, most recently aimed at Israel. We have missile attacks or drone attacks against U.S. troops in Syria and Iraq. All that describes a vast landscape. Are we adequate to cover that much space from the Mediterranean to the Red Sea all the way to the Indian Ocean?
The U.S. military is demonstrating, John, its unmatched ability. This isn't just a patriotic American saying, it's an actual fact. Unmatched ability to get extraordinary combat power anywhere in the world pretty darn quickly. You have the Forward Carrier Strike Group operating in the Eastern Mediterranean. You've got the Eisenhower Carrier Strike Group en route. They're going to put that into the U.S. Central Command Area of Operations. That carrier strike group is not just aircraft carriers. Some of your listeners will know. It's also guided missile cruisers and also guided missile destroyers. And one of those guided missile destroyers, Carney, is the very ship that intercepted those missiles shot by the Iranian terror proxy Houthis apparently in the direction of Israel. And you also have the Department of Defense bolstering our F-15s, F-16s, F-35s, and A-10s in the region, sending multiple air defense systems and repositioning the Marine Expeditionary Unit and its three-ship amphibious readiness group closer to Israel. So this is extraordinary combat power. But in some way, Iran's starting to call this administration's bluff a little bit, attacking our troops in Iraq and Syria, kind of having Hezbollah doing a tit for tat with Israel. There is a real danger here, I think, the Biden administration could have an Obama-style Syria red line moment where if we keep getting our forces hit and we do nothing, it's going to simply be a green light for more aggression.
And the industrial base, the president addressed the matter. Do we have time? Do we have the money? Do we have the understanding that all of that equipment that we've just gone through has to come from a manufacturing hub that may not exist? How long do we have to rebuild it if necessary?
You know, for what? To answer that question. But the bottom line is we have three beleaguered democracies, Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, that are confronting two hot threats and one cold threat that could become hot. And whether those get worse or the cold one becomes hot, I'm talking about Taiwan, will depend largely on whether the arsenal of democracy can become what it used to be. At this moment, when we're dealing with the largest unprovoked land invasion in Europe since World War II, this horrible attack on Israel, and trying to make Taiwan a porcupine to deter aggression and trying to conduct the most significant military modernization in 40 years, we've turned our arsenal of democracy, and it's not what many Americans thought it would be because of insufficient and defense spending, budget control acts, sequestration, habitual reliance on continuing resolution, and this foolish way that we've bought munitions at the minimal rate just to keep the production line open in some sort of just-in-time model that's good for Walmart but not for national security, and now we're paying the piper. That's the bad news. The good news is, since February of last year, people who work these issues are moving quickly. We're going the right direction. We just need to move faster.
Brad Bowman, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. I'm John Batchelor.